right. Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome back to Passions Podcast. I am your regular host, Latara. You know me, but I'm here today with a very special guest host, friend of the show, Camelia.
Hi, everybody.
Now, let me make sure. Am I saying your name right? Camelia?
It is Camelia. I go by Cam, so whichever is easiest for you.
Okay, Cam, Camelia. Yep. I think that's a beautiful name.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Most people don't pronounce it right, so usually I'm just like, Cam is good.
Well, I was calling you Camilla for a little bit, and I was like, wait a minute, I'm missing the, there's a second I there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, sorry about that. I'm so sorry. Good. But if you have your name is way more beautiful than Camilla. Camilla. Sorry to any Camillas out there. All right. So this week, before we do that, Cam, tell everybody about yourself. Introduce yourself and give us some information about who you are.
My name is Cam, obviously. I'll tell you a little bit about kind of how I got into passions. Just kind of briefly. So when I was younger, my little sister was watching it with my grandparents. I'm 33, so I don't remember how old I was, but this just kind of giving context to, I think I was somewhere late middle, early high school. So my little sister was watching it with my grandparents, and I was, you know, it's funny because she's younger than me. She got super into it, and I didn't understand what the point of the show was. Well, you know, I never watched stories with my grandparents. One day, I happened to catch an episode because we were always at my grandparents' house, and I was like, this is interesting. What is this? I don't remember the specific episode. I know there was a bunch of magic shit. I know it was Tabby and Timmy and their shenanigans. So I caught that episode, and then the more I went over there, I think it was during the summer because we went over there pretty often, I'd catch more and more episodes, and I was like, okay, now I kind of get why she's into this. It was like weird, but it was kind of what, it was like a train wreck. You can't stop watching.
Oh,
it's like, it's so bad that it's good.
A glorious.
Somewhere in the course of that time, I ended up watching it. You know, my sister kind of fell off watching it. I would watch it I would go with my grandpa. I would be like, it's 1 o'clock, it's time for Passions. I'm like, woo, watch Passions. And we'd both be so mad. Like, there would be days where there would be like something going on with the news where it would broadcast and the soap opera wouldn't show. We were so mad.
Oh, preempted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either a weather thing or some breaking news that just stopped the broadcast. We're like, but what about Passions? What about Teresa and Ethan?
When the Olympics were on, the Passions didn't air. Yes. The soap operas didn't air when the Olympics were happening. And I always hated that.
It seemed like it was always in the middle of something we needed the answers for. It was never in like those kind of dull weeks where not a lot's going on. It was always during the night.
And it was never a sport anybody wants to watch. No. You know what I mean? Because it's the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. So it's like the biathlon or whatever. You know, it's like never, anyway, whatever.
Yep.
So thank you, Cam. Excited to have you on. Ready to talk about this show. We're talking about 421 through 425. Yes?
That's what I watch. 421 to 425.
I have to check that every week. I'm watching so much Passions.
I had to recheck and make sure. I'm like, I am watching the right ones.
Yeah, we're on top of it. We got this thing. Okay, so this week we're going to start with the magic storyline, everyone. And keeping with the last few weeks, there are no summaries. It's out the window, guys. It's gone. So let's get started. Let's jump right in. So we're going to start where Kay has decided. We pick up last week. We ended off. Kay has decided she's going to tell everybody that the souls of the damned are holding Charity in the fires of hell. Like, she's like, I'm going to tell everybody the truth. And the truth is that the souls of the damned have Charity bound in hell. But no one believes her. So she says this thing. She tells them, hey guys, I actually do know where Charity is. Like, that's what she says. Hey guys, so...
After she's been like, I don't know where Charity is.
Yeah, I actually do know where Charity is. The souls of the damned have her in hell. Okay. All right.
Okay.
I mean, that is a rough thing to say to anybody, right? It's like, okay. So nobody believes her. And then Miguel is like, well, why not just check?
Like, she, like she's, a, I don't know, in her room. So we're just going to go up there and check. We're just gonna, like,
I hate Miguel, but I loved it, this. Miguel, honestly, Miguel stepped it up a little bit this week. Not a lot, but a little bit. Because Kay says this, the charity's in hell. Hell's in her closet. That's why she was scared of the closet. That's why there were flame marks there or whatever. And Miguel, again, nobody believes her. But Miguel's like, well, it's worth looking into. Which is correct. You're right. Thank you, Miguel. Finally. Yeah. Finally. Because normally when somebody says stuff like this, he's like, you're just tired. Go take a nap. You know? But he finally is like, it's worth looking into. So the kids all go upstairs. Miguel's about to open the closet and Kay's like, no, stop. Don't do that. Everyone's super skeptical for some reason, even though the walls in this house have bled and there's been bird attacks. And we exploded the fireball. Everybody's still so skeptical. Well, he opens the closet and the reason, you know, there's nothing there. So, okay, I guess then it's like, well, maybe they have a reason to be skeptical, right? Like they think they're right. Reese then starts saying, oh, this was annoying. And I used to like Reese, but they're making him very unlikable. Do you feel like?
Yeah, he started out like really great, especially, and you kind of make somebody to empathize with, especially with his big, you know, crush on Kay, and he's just the sweetest kid. But then he kind of becomes sort of obnoxious,
and yeah,
the just I don't know, this uppity attitude, and then I don't like the way he acts with Tabitha either. Like we know she's a witch, but like we know, but like he's just I don't know, he's not, I don't like him right now. He does some stuff later on that's a little bit better, but.
No, I'm not liking the trajectory of Reese at this moment. He then goes on to say that everything was in Kay's mind. She saw all of this and she was she's delusional. And that the demons you saw were your own personal demons and the fire that you saw and the hell that you saw was you in subconsciously, you knew you were going to catch hell because you lost Charity. What? And he's like the main one who's always looking up the occult shit on his Palm Pilot, which his Palm Pilot makes such an appearance in these episodes.
It does. And it works. We didn't have these back then. He works like it's like an iPhone would be now. And it doesn't make any sense. That's not how those worked. But
yeah, at all. But because the writers did not actually know anything about technology, I think they thought that their viewers probably knew just as little about technology as they did. So they were like, you know what, we can write this. We don't actually have to research how these things work if you can actually do these things. So they just wrote it like that. But Miguel then stands up for Kay. And stands up to Reese and says, Reese, shut the fuck up. He actually is kind of mean to him. He's like, Reese, stop it with this. Because Miguel's getting really, he's been worked up for a while. But he's like, where is Charity? Let us not forget this boy is obsessed with Charity. Obsessed. And the fact that she's been missing for 15 minutes is a big problem for him, you know. So he's like, he's all flustered. He's like, Reese, stop it with this psychobabble nonsense. And then he says, you know, with all the crazy things that have been going on around here recently, it's not that crazy. You know, maybe Kay did see what she thinks she saw, right? I mean, we did all see the blood. He makes that point. So I have to give Miguel some props. I do. Because I've been shitting on him heavy for like 2 months.
I think it was also just that he saw that once there was an answer about where Charity was, instead of them just wandering around, where's Charity? Once Kay actually provided an answer, and then Miguel's just like, oh, I'm all in. Where's Charity? Everybody shut up. Everything that Kay says is correct. We need to find Charity. She knows where she is. I think he was all in then.
At one point he says, stop trying to explain it and just listen to Kay. And I loved that. I really liked that. I mean, he doesn't ever listen to Kay or Charity, but I appreciated that he is trying to tell other people to listen and is listening himself. So he then also says, Kay saying Charity's in hell. When we heard Charity's voice coming out of that computer downstairs, that's where she says she was too. She says she was in hell, except that never happened. Charity never once said she was in hell.
No.
Charity just kept screaming, Miguel, help me. Miguel, help me. She never once said where she was. What she said was, ask Kay. When they asked her where she was like, ask Kay. Kay knows where I am. But she never was like, I'm in hell. No. So, okay, that they rewrote that. I'm just saying. He says, you know, Charity says she was in hell. So this makes sense. What Kay is saying is makes sense. So we have to figure out how to get to hell. Opens up the closet again. Nothing there. But this time starts to hear. Is this when he hears Charity's voice?
Yes, I think yes, because the doors are open, they're standing around, there's nothing there, and he's like, something happens or somebody says, listen, let's listen. And then she's like, help me, Miguel. And at first, you know, he's like, wait, that's Charity. And it takes a minute, and she answers back again, Miguel, help me. And I feel like she might have said something about the demons. I feel like she might have said the demons, something, I don't know.
Oh, no, but, before they hear Charity, now I remember what happened. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Before they hear Charity, here's what happened. So Miguel's saying everybody needs to listen to Kay. Then Jessica and Reese team up and they kind of go toe-to-toe with Kay and Miguel. And like, they just argue back and forth. Like, this doesn't make any sense. And Miguel's like, it doesn't have to make sense. You know, they go back and forth.
And they've got Father Lonergan on their side too. He's also like, you all need to listen to. Yeah, because he knows what Kay's done.
That's another thing. I guess Kay had to say it for some reason instead of him just saying what needed to be said as the adult in the room, as the grown up in the room, Father Lonergan, you should probably just do what needs to be done instead of waiting on a teenage girl to do it, right? I don't know. Father Lonergan. I love him though. I do. I'm loving him.
He's ridiculous, but he's so entertaining. And he's that so actor great. Committed to that complete nonsense. I just wish I could have been there when he got the script. I'm like,
the level of commitment from Father Lonergan is mwah, beautiful, amazing. Jessica and Kay and Jessica and Reese and Kay and Miguel are like arguing, blah, 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 blah. Then Reese says, for hell to have opened up in Charity's closet, there would have to be some extraordinary evil in this house. And Kay is like, well, evil is here and evil has Charity. That's what she says, because I felt like that was a good line. Evil is here and evil has Charity. And then Father Lonergan backs her up and is like, yes, evil is here. Now that Kay has said it, I can say it too. Evil is here. And Hecuba was like outside, hovering outside the window, watching all of this. And she is not happy about what Kay has done, that she's basically given her up and said, like, evil is here. Charity's in the closet. We got to get her out. And she says that Hecuba says Kay will pay for this treachery. She's going to pay the price. So then Hecuba pops up outside of the window and starts to talk to Kay. And Kay's like, there it is. There's the evil.
And no one can see
it. Yeah, only Kay can see or hear Hecuba. Kay didn't know this, I don't think. But so she then starts arguing for everybody else what it looks like. She's arguing with the thin air. And they're also concerned for her sanity. It's crazy. It's crazy because they've never been this concerned for Charity's sanity. She's been doing a lot worse. But they're all like, Kay, are you, you know, basically Hecuba does this to discredit Kay and make everybody question her sanity, which they do, except Father Lonergan is like, no, Kay's not crazy. Please listen to Kay. And Simone pulls Kay outside at one point during all of this hubbub. And she's like, you're scaring me. Stop it with this lie already, you know. And she says, you need to tell everyone you made it all up, or they're going to lock you away the same way you had Charity locked up, which I had fully and completely forgotten about.
I forgot about that too.
I forgot.
When she was in the psych ward because of the bird statue.
Because of the bird statue.
I forgot about that damn bird statue.
That damn bird statue. I just blocked out so much of the bird statue stuff and so the charity stuff got wrapped up in that. And I had completely forgotten that Kay drove Charity to madness and that she had to be locked up in the psych ward. I have been riding for Kay a little hard lately because I think I had just started to forget some of the awful things she has done. She's done some really nasty things. But yes, everybody remember Kay drove her own cousin to madness with a bird statue. So Kay tells Simone, no, it's all true. Like, I can't take anything back. Nobody's going to lock me up because this is all true. Like, I'm not crazy. And then they go back to the room and Miguel starts yelling into the closet. This is when we hear Charity's voice. Miguel starts yelling into the closet. Charity, Charity, I love you. I love you, Charity. I love you. And that's when we hear Charity's voice. Mm-hmm. She yells back and she goes, Miguel, I love you. Like, she helped me, you know. And then he's like, wait, did you hear that? And he was the only one that heard it. I think Kay may have heard it too. But then he made everybody be really quiet. And she yells back again.
That's what I'm remembering.
Miguel, Miguel. And everybody realizes that Charity's in the closet. But then Miguel is like, Reese, go get a crowbar. Because Charity must have gotten herself trapped inside of the walls somehow. I mean, I guess it's as plausible as her being in hell.
But then they had mentioned at one point the scorch marks that were on the side of the closet. So they knew there was some kind of, I think this was the, at one point those scorch marks were mentioned because you could see her closet. And then like on the side where the hinges are, there's like some black scorch marks. But I don't know if they had noticed. I feel like at one point somebody pointed that out.
Oh, yeah. They pointed it out several episodes ago. And then in these episodes, they bring it up again. Yeah. And I will reiterate, Hecuba was able to bring all of hell into Charity's closet and then make it go away. But she left two scorch marks. I don't understand how she could not manage to get rid of those. You know, if you got rid of all of hell, you leave behind these little tidbits. See, these are the things. That's why Tabitha told her she was sloppy. You know, you sloppy girl. It's not as easy as you think it is.
But she tried to tell her.
She really did. So where was I? Yes.
So tells Reese to go get a crowbar. Thinks she's trapped in the walls.
Yeah. Thinks she's trapped in the walls. I mean, again, I guess it's as plausible as her being in hell, I guess. Mm-hmm. But Kay just told you there were flames and shit in here, and there's scorch marks on the door, as you just said. I mean, why do you think she's in the walls? And how would she have gotten in the walls? Like, at least Kay has an explanation of how Charity got to hell. She says the dragons drug her down there. Like, they came and they took her. How would Charity have gotten in the walls of this house? By accident. He says she must have accidentally gotten stuck in the walls. Who does that? How? That's not something that's not a thing, Miguel. I'm being so incredulous. Dumb. I'm annoyed at myself because I'm being so incredulous, because even though she's not in the walls, it's far more outlandish that she's in hell. And yet, for me, That's the more plausible explanation. This is what passions does to your brain.
It does.
This is what passions does to your brain. My brain is mush. I'm also just fucking tired. But okay. So Miguel thinks she's in the walls, but Father Lonergan is like, Miguel, a crowbar is not going to help you. She's in hell, buddy. And then Father Lonergan is like, starts to like pray, or I don't know exactly. I guess it's not an incantation. It's a prayer. I think when it's evil, it's an incantation. If it's a witch, it's an incantation. If it's a priest, it's a prayer. But it's the same. It's the same idea where you just say words and things happen. So he says, like, show yourself to us, evil fires of the deep, demons of the deep. Make yourself, reveal yourselves, basically. And he prays this prayer and he opens the portal to hell with the power of prayer. It was great. Opens it up wide open. Bust it wide open. Father Lonergan is busting it wide open. I'm sorry. I'm cracking myself up.
Okay.
He busted hell wide open, okay, with the power of prayer. And so now everybody believes it, obviously. Miguel immediately starts to rush into hell with like nothing, no understanding of what anything is. And he's trying to get to Charity, and Charity's in there going, help, Miguel, help, 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 help. Everybody's holding him back. He's like, no, I got to get to Charity. I got to get to her. This boy is obsessed. He is obsessed with Charity. No fucking way. I'm trying to think who I would run into the flames of hell for. My mom, maybe.
I've had a boyfriend for 5.5 years and I have to think real hard. I'm like, that's hell though.
I know for a fact I wouldn't be running into the flames of hell for a boyfriend. Men aren't worth it.
Really? No, bad.
I'm gonna cut that out. I gotta cut that out.
Oh man. I think I wrote this down too. Even once he gets in there, I don't even know how much of a threat it is, because I mean, I think at one point they come up, they're fighting with the demons, we'll get to it. But like once he gets in there, they're just standing in there. There's no like, they're not burning.
Yeah, Charity seems fine, but beyond the fact that she's wrestling with demons, but she seems like she's not being burned at all. She seems kind of fine. And yeah, they just kind of stand in there. She's just like standing there, you know? So yeah, what he didn't have any plan. What was he going to do once he rushed into hell? So everybody's holding him back. And then the Charity turns into a demon, because it was just an illusion. It was an illusion, Dorsey. That's a 90 Day reference. Do you watch 90 Day Fiance?
I have not seen it, but I've heard y'all talk about it. And so I recognized that reference when you said it.
That's a 90-day run. It's an illusion, Dorsey. It's an illusion. She's an illusion, Dorsey. And she turns into a demon, and the demon's like, ha 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 ha, na 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 boo boo. And Father Lonergan's like, see, do you now see the deceptions of hell and how you are not equipped to go into hell? We have to equip you with knowledge from the Vatican's website.
Why the Vatican?
I don't know. Actually, he doesn't even say that until much later.
Yes. But I'm just like, the Vatican, because it has to be the Vatican. I guess, I don't know. I guess they're Catholic. I don't understand.
First he says, I don't understand. Yeah, I guess they're supposed to be Catholic. And I think, you know, the Vatican, there's all this mystique around the Vatican. You know, I feel like no offense to any Catholics out there. Listen, are you Catholic?
No.
I work for Catholics. I work at a Catholic school. I have nothing against Catholics, but I will say this. Many many an atrocity have been committed by the Catholics, okay? Oh, yeah. And they have a lot, there's a lot of history there, bloodied history there. And so I think when people write certain kinds of stories like this, where it's like good and evil, it's like, oh, of course the Vatican has all of the secrets of all of the evil that has ever happened in the world. They know because they've been down there, because they have that old history, a bloodied history. And there's just a lot of mystique around specifically the Vatican. Like there's that whole the Da Vinci Code situation. I didn't read the book, but I did see the movie.
I've been there.
You've been to the Vatican?
Mm-hmm. In 2014, I took a study abroad trip to Italy and went to Rome and Florence. And during the Rome part of the trip, we got to go to Vatican City for a day and we got to watch the Pope speak. So I got to see the Pope. That was really cool. And then we got to go inside and tour and walk around. And so it was really pretty. It was really nice.
I would love to go. I've never been to Italy, Italia. Yes. I would love to go and see the Vatican and see all the old relics.
It's just massive. Like, you know, I kind of describe it how big it is. There's the pillar, and then there's the little stand that the pillar's on, and then there's like the top part of that. So I am probably as tall as the thing that the pillar sits on. Like, wow. Just talking about how big it is. So I'm about 5'5", and I come up to about right before the pillar starts, and then it goes up. So it's just massive marble floors. I don't even know how tall it is. And it's ridiculous. It's beautiful.
I'd love to go before the world crumbles around us.
Yes.
I'd love to go before, you know, Russia continues its march across Europe.
Ugh.
So, all right, back to passion. Back to this fantasy world where...
So he says we have to consult the Vatican or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, he's like, he doesn't say the Vatican at first. He says, Reese, do you have your tiny computer with you? That's what he says. Not me. That was not me. That was dialogue from this fucking show. Reese, do you have your tiny computer with you? Reese is like, oh yeah, I always have it with me. Takes out his Palm Pilot. And he says, I need you to look up some ancient documents. Can you do that? Reese is like, no problem, Father. Ancient documents. I have access to the entire internet, and I don't know that I have access to ancient documents. You know what I mean? Like, what do you search? What do you look for? What do you like? That's I literally wrote, Father Lonergan says he's not prepared and needs to read these documents, but we get no specifics. There's no specifics. And just oh, and then he's like, we have to translate it from the, what?
If you look up ancient documents in Google, it's going to be like, the fuck are you talking about? There's so many what documents?
What exactly?
Even if you said Vatican ancient documents, it would still be like, what specific?
It looks like, did you mean this, you know? Google's always correcting me. I don't appreciate it. I don't appreciate that shit. You know what I mean? You know that's what the fuck I meant. Just Google the shit. You know it. So stop trying to correct my spelling and shit. You know what I meant.
Yep.
Google. Oh, stupid machine. All right. So Miguel's not prepared for his battle with evil. And so they look up these documents. We get no information about it. None whatsoever. Nope. Kay and Simone have yet another conversation outside wherein Simone basically figures out exactly what happened, but says it's so unthinkable. She's the smartest person on the show. She is. I've been saying this. She's the smartest person on the show. But she's figured out exactly what has happened, but it's so unthinkable to her that her best friend has sold her soul to evil, to, you know, to get Miguel, basically, that she's like, no, you wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do that. But girl, she slapped you, didn't she? She did that. Yeah. And I, personally, I think any person who calls themselves my best friend and then slaps me clear across the face is capable of anything. Capable of absolutely anything, because we're supposed to be best friends and you slapped me. So I think Kay is capable of way more than Simone is aware of, obviously. But they have like that outside. And then Hecuba like turns Kay into a demon the hallway.
With the terrible face, the terrible wig. Like it just looks like a low budget Halloween mask.
Well, but that's exactly what it was. It came directly from Spirit of Halloween.
It did.
Yeah. 100%. It's like one of those witches masks, mm-hmm. you know? And so Hecuba turns her into this because Kay, I don't actually know why. Do you know why? Because I wrote it down, but I was confused.
I'm trying to remember if I wrote it. I can't.
I don't know why she did this.
I do not remember why she did that.
I don't know why she did it. But she did it.
Simone. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if she's trying to scare Simone, if she's trying to punish Kay.
It probably was that because she had that same face whenever she gave Charity the damn manicure.
Right. The manicure. Yeah. Oh, please. She clipped exactly 2 fingernails. that's an old episode. All right. So I don't know why Hecuba did this, but she did it. She turned Kay into like a ghoul right in front of Simone's eyes. And then I think Kay like blacks out because she just starts saying like, you would have done the same thing. Just wait till you realize that Whitney is stealing Chad from you. You'll do anything to get with Chad. You're going to do the same kind of things that I did. And then Kay like passes out.
Oh, yeah.
And wakes back up as herself and doesn't remember anything. She has a Charity episode. Mm-hmm. She doesn't remember anything.
She really does.
She has a Charity episode. She pulled a Charity. And that's that. Like, they really glossed over that.
Yeah.
And then I think Simone.
There was later on in one of the later episodes, Simone kind of brought it up and explained to Kay, like, you told me all these horrible things and you know, you had a horrible face and you said all these horrible things to me. And Kay's just like, I don't remember any of that. And Simone kind of believes her and is like, that's what scares me, that you don't remember, because Kay doesn't remember.
No. Yeah. It's interesting.
And that was as far as it went. I think at one point Simone does say, did you sell your soul? Or whatever. Yeah. She directly asks her, and Kay's just like, I don't have time to deal with this right now.
Yeah, that's exactly how that exchange went. Mm-hmm. And deflect, deflect, deflect. I would too. If somebody was asking, if I had actually sold my soul, and somebody was asking me if I sold my soul, look at the time. I don't have time for this conversation.
No, I gotta go. I got
stuff to do, people to see. Demons to meet. So they go back into the bedroom, mm-hmm. and Hecuba has called all the demons to kill Miguel. She's like, demons of the deep, come and get this boy out of the fucking way for me. I'm fucking tired of him. Come and get him. Come and get him. So these demons come out of the closet, and before Miguel can prepare for the fight, with the documents, with the ancient documents. And so everyone starts fighting these demons. It was awesome. I loved this part. Everybody's fighting the demons, and Father Lonigan's fighting. He's throwing his holy water.
Endless holy water that never runs out. I wrote that down. It was like Father Lonigan and his endless thing of holy water.
He must have a spring in his pants, because it does not run out. He's got plenty of holy water. Hecuba makes that point. He's like, doesn't he ever run out of that shit?
It does.
Everybody's fighting these demons. And but eventually Miguel gets overtaken. The demons knock him down, knock him out. The kids and Father Lonigan continue to fight. Then it's just Father Lonigan standing by himself. And then he prays for help. He prays for help to defeat the evil, please. And he never says, God, please send some goodness. It's always goodness. But anyway, to defeat the evil, and that angel girl shows up outside.
Her and Hecuba get into it. I don't even remember what the angel girl said because I hate that little character.
I'm so glad you hate her. I hate her.
She's terrible. Like, she's not... I don't understand the point of her at all. And if not from the beginning, she shows up, gives some vague whatever the hell, and then just fucks off. I don't understand.
Recent episode that has not aired yet, I basically was like, she's a villain. She's a villain. Not in these episodes. She does better in this episode. But the way she did Grace, I will never get over it. I'll never get over it. Just shows up to this pregnant lady who already is having a dangerous pregnancy, high risk pregnancy, and then just upsets her. And I'm not going to say she pushed her down the stairs, but she didn't help. And that's all I got to say about that. Mm-hmm. Now, so the angel shows up, this bitch shows up, and this time she actually does help somewhat. Because Miguel is like dead, y'all. Like, he's dead again. Miguel's dead for a second time, third time. Miguel has died a few times. And we, again, keep glossing over the fact that Miguel has been dead a few times. I think this is his third time dying.
I don't think Pilar knows about any of them.
How could she? He never goes home.
He never goes home. Yeah.
He never goes home. How could she know? They don't talk to each other.
That is your youngest son. I'd be like, get home now.
I don't even know the last time they even communicate. Oh, you know what? He went to Teresa's party. He saw his mom at a party. They caught up. Let's catch up, you know, at a party. So Miguel's been dead. He was dead. The demons killed him. This angel shows up, talks to Hecuba for a while, instead of like going in and like getting rid of the demons. She talks to Hecuba, and then Hecuba's like, you can't do anything here, you're powerless. And then she shoots light power out of her body, out of her eyes. It was like a laser beam, but it was bright light. And she shoots it out of her body directly into Miguel, and he wakes up. So she resurrected Miguel again. I think at one point we were calling Miguel a zombie, and I'm going back to that. Miguel's a zombie, everybody. He keeps dying and coming back to life. Zombie Miguel. I know we get zombie charity later, but zombie Miguel walked so zombie charity could run.
There we go. Run.
Run. Yes. So, all right.
The angel girl. And so she resurrected Miguel.
Mm-hmm.
And then at one point she starts getting strangled.
Like, yeah.
I don't remember what led to that because there was a lot going on.
When
she strangled her.
Well, she shoots the light into Miguel. Miguel wakes up. Father Lonigan yells, "My prayers have been answered. Miguel has been given the power to fight the demons." And that's when Hecuba was like, "You bitch, you meddling bitch," and she starts to strangle the angel, which is trying to say that 10 times fast. Strangle the angel. That's tough. She starts to strangle that angel, but of course, and I don't know why that angel put up with it for so fucking long, because she strangles her for a long time, and then the little girl finally just turns into light and flies away. She could have done that from the beginning. Immediately, she turns into a little piece of light, and I don't know what I'm talking about.
She likes being choked. I'm done. Sorry.
A little ball. Yeah, she got choked, and she didn't have to. She enjoyed it. That's all I'm gonna say. You know what I'm saying? She liked it, like I like it. Ow. Ain't nothing wrong with a little light choking here and there. Okay. Okay, I'm done. Okay. Y'all don't need to know about my proclivities. All right, so the angel fucks off, as she does, and Hecuba says she sees the tide is turning inside. Miguel gets up. He's fighting the demons. He's punching them real John Wick style. And Hecuba says, damn that angel. And you know, I've never agreed with Hecuba more. Damn that angel. She's so annoying. Damn that angel. I love that. That might be the episode title. I don't know. I'm not sure. I've got a few that I like, but damn that angel. I just really like the ring of it. All right. So Miguel and Father Lonergan manage to push the demons back into the closet, close it up. Miguel collapses. Kay blames herself. She says, this is all my fault. This is all my fault. Jessica, interestingly enough, Jessica comforts Kay. Yeah, she comes.
It's not your fault. You couldn't have known.
It is her fault. And she did know. But what Jessica says, she says, I understand why you didn't tell us where Charity was in the first place. Those demons were hella scary. You know, so I understand what you must have been feeling. And that's that. Charity starts calling out to Miguel again for help. And Father Lonergan tells Miguel he's still not ready to fight the evil. He has to do his reading first. You have required reading. There's prerequisites before you can go to hell. There's prerequisites to fulfill before you can go to hell, Miguel. Go to hell, Miguel. If ever there is a line with hell and Miguel in rhyming sequence, that will be the name of the episode. I'm putting that out into the universe. Miguel in hell. Miguel's in hell. That's gotta be. They're gonna have to say it at some point.
Because this storyline lasts forever. So it goes on for at least another month or so. Like it lasts forever.
We've been doing this for so long already.
Yep.
Like Hecuba showed up. I want to say in episode 300. Mm-hmm. Hecuba's.
Was in the mine shaft. They met her, then they went back,
mm-hmm.
and then later on, she shows up to deal with the Tiffany shit and says, "Hey, you give me your soul, I'll help you with help Kay with the Tiffany lie." That's why Kay sold her soul.
Yeah,
and so we've been doing that since then. We've been doing and it keeps. We're not done yet.
We've been at it for a while. So Charity's calling out to Miguel. Father Lonergan says, "You're not ready. You need to read these ancient documents on." this boy's palm pilot. Miguel's like, no, I have to. He insists on going to hell, and he's like hobbling, right? Because he's been beat up by these demons. So not only is Father Lonergan telling you do not have the information you need to have before you go to hell, but also your body is in shambles. You can't even walk. What are you gonna do in hell? What are you going to do against the demons in hell in on their home turf, Miguel? Think, Himbo. Think, but he can't.
Nope. The moment he hears Sharon, he's like, I'm out. I can't.
Yeah. Well, everybody tries to stop him again. We do this a couple of times. But eventually, he just runs right into hell.
Yeah.
I think that's where we kind of end it there with them.
He stopped there, and he's just standing there. Like I said, he's not even burning. He's just standing there. Looking around, we don't even see Charity. We just see him and those demons.
Right. So we don't have any real like Hecuba, Tabitha stuff. All of Hecuba stuff we kind of talked about. Tabitha and Timmy are just hanging out.
They watching. Are the most that happened. They're kind of just talking about what's going on with the Bennets. And then Timmy is taking notes.
Yeah.
Write the sequel to Hidden Passions, which doesn't actually happen, but it was pretty cute. He was being cute. He's
always cute.
He's writing down everything. Whenever they'll say something, some kind of phrase he likes, and he's like, this is great, and jots it down in his little notebook.
The most important thing that comes out of Timmy and Tabitha's conversation during this time is that we learn that Grace curse people. She has powerful curse powers. Her cursing powers are mighty. Okay. And that is so important because
we talked about that a lot. And now she's got power she doesn't even know that she has, and all the Standish women have them. So Kay has them, Jessica has them, but they don't know.
Yeah.
All the Standish women or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah. And specifically her, Grace's, is that she has the power to curse people, and that they are very, very powerful curses and hard to break. So with that said, let's go on over to these Bennetts, these Cranes, the Lopez Fichelles. Or... all of these people are kind of mixed up together this week. Mm-hmm. And so we're gonna power through. It was a lot of kind of back and forth, a lot of storylines kind of getting mixed and intertwined.
And overlap, yeah, because at one point Ivy's at the hospital, but then later on she has some stuff with Julian, she has some stuff with Ethan, so there's,
yeah,
she's kind of all over the place.
Ivy, I have a lot to say about Ivy, but we're not going to start there. We're going to pick up with Chad and Whitney, Ethan, Teresa at the mansion. They're all at Ethan's room. Ethan's packing up his shit. He says, I got to get out of here because I am no longer a crane, right? And yes, then Chad is struggling with the knowledge that Teresa knew about Ethan's paternity and just didn't tell him. He's struggling with the fact that she knew about this letter, had it on her laptop, and just didn't say anything. And he's saying he has already said to Whitney, if Ethan asks me about it, if I knew anybody who knew this information, I'm going to have to tell him the truth. And I respect that. I really do. I truly respect it. And so he's kind of struggling with this information as Ethan is asking him, what do you know? You're saying you know something, or you didn't say it. You just seem like you might know something. Have you
asked Chad over and over? He's like, do you know who sent the letter to the tabloid? Do you know who you know knew I was a crane and didn't tell me? And he does actually directly say, do you know who knew I was a crane and didn't tell me? And Chad just kind of sits there, and Teresa and Whitney are standing in the doorway, and at no point does he tell. And then later on he said, well, we'll get to it later on, he's like, technically he asked me, I don't know, he says he gets by on some kind of technicality, but I'm like, no, he straight up asked you if you knew.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting because Ethan asks him several questions, but the only question he answers is, do you know who sent the letter to the tabloid?
Yes.
So I think because he didn't answer the other questions and decided this is the question I'm going to answer, yep, he's like, technically, yeah, I didn't lie.
Yeah.
You know, technically I didn't lie. Well, whatever. So Whitney poses this hype. I'm going to do this part really, really quickly because it's not super important. It's only got one little important part. Whitney basically poses this hypothetical situation where, what if the person had the letter but didn't do anything with it and didn't do anything wrong? They just had it and the another person found it, and they're the person who sent it to the tabloid. Mm-hmm. Would you still be upset with the person who had the letter? And Ethan says, yes, it doesn't matter because the person who had the letter and never came to me, that is also unforgivable. And they clearly made a copy of it. Why did they do that? That's a fair question.
That's a fair question.
That's a fair question.
Teresa, and I remember this happens a lot later, getting into much later in the series, she does kind of give an explanation of why she scanned the letter. But I have like a whole, and I don't mean to jump straight into Teresa and Ethan, I'm of two minds, but one of them is stronger. I just feel like when Teresa first found that out, Pilar begged her not to say anything. She said, Teresa, don't say anything. This is not your business. Keep your mouth shut, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at the time she's, you know, a kid, even though she's technically still a kid. We'll Google that later. But she was asked not to say anything, told not to say anything. It's not your business. This will blow up the cranes. This will ruin us. They're going to come after you, blah, 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 blah. Don't say anything. Don't say anything. So I'm a little torn because should she have told Ethan that she knew? Yes. But was it her place? Really, I feel like Ivy's the one who was hiding all of this
for
20 plus years. I'm just like, it's I get it, but Therese, like, she wasn't the one that needed it. That wasn't the wasn't her place. I don't think it's something that should have broken them up. She's like, I'm gonna lose Ethan forever. Why?
I agree with you. I am somewhat torn on this. The first part of it where she knew about this and wanted to tell. She wanted to tell Ethan. And Pilar, yes, her mother was like, no, do not. It's not your place. You cannot. It'll tear him apart. It's going to ruin his life. All of these things, right? However, that was before Ethan had called off his engagement for Therese. That was before. Wait. Was it?
Therese found
out. No, it was like. It was before.
No, she did find out before because she knew. Didn't she knew when she went to their engagement party?
No, I'm remembering. No, I remember exactly what happened. Ethan had not called off his engagement to Gwen, but he had told Therese he was going to.
Right, that's what it was.
He had told her he was choosing her or not choosing her, but that he was going to call off his wedding.
Yeah.
And then she went to that engagement party because Rebecca kind of tricked her into coming. And then Rebecca kind of set up this whole situation where it looked like Ethan was making fun of Therese and that.
Rebecca told her, get out of town. I'll send you anywhere you want to go. And she goes to get a suitcase. And I think
that's when she found those papers the second time. The first time she found them and nobody figured out what it was. The second time she found them and read Ivy's letter and realized that it was Ethan's. And that's when she scanned the stuff. And she did scan it with ill intent. Like, she was like, just in case I need this. Smart girl. I would have done the same. Just in case I need this. Because this, in her mind, he had thrown her over, played with her emotions.
Yeah.
You know?
At that time, she was distraught. She thought he was manipulating her. And she never deleted it off. Big mistake on her part. Ethan's secret.
It's so dumb.
And it came back to bite her.
Yeah,
and I wish she had just been on it, but I don't. Therese's her own worst enemy. We love her, but she.
Yeah, I love her, but she's also a child making childish decisions.
She is.
So anyway, Ethan says to Whitney about this hypothetical of a person having the letter, but never meaning to do anything with it. He's like, they're just as much at fault. And I'm going to just, like, he says multiple times, and this is the only time I'm going to say it, cause he does it a bunch. He says multiple times, I'm going to find out who knew about this. I'm going to destroy them. He says it a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. It should be noted, Ivy also says that a bunch of times in these episodes. I'm going to find out who knew about this letter, who had this letter, who sent it to the tabloid. I'm going to destroy them. Okay. That's the level that they're at right now. That's the level that Ethan is at. I'm going to scorch the earth when I find out who did this to me and who knew about it, right? Who already knew about it. It's interesting that he has this much vitriol and this much anger for unknown peoples, right? People he's not sure who it is. But where is that energy for Pilar and Ivy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm not upset that he's not more mad at his mom. Like, I appreciate the amount of grace that he's giving her. But if you're really going to be this mad about this, Ivy's the one that did it to you.
Ivy is the main one to be upset with. There's a lot of blame to go around. There are a lot of unclean hands in all of this. Ivy is at the center of it. Ivy knew from the beginning you were not her, or that Julian was not your father. She lied to you. She lied to everyone. She's the one.
Yeah.
Pilar, but he needs to understand, like,
Pilar's an employee.
Confidant, and it could have lost her job. There's a lot of things that could have happened if Pilar.
Yeah. Beyond just being her confidant, Pilar is her employee.
Yeah.
Like, that's my boss. and my boss, and this is part of my, and kind of this is part of my job. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, but it but it is.
So
in some ways, Pilar was just kind of doing her job, you know?
Yeah.
And it's shitty. It's shitty. And if I was Ethan, I would be mad at Pilar. I would be mad at my mom, and I would be mad at Pilar because Pilar kept this from me, you know? I don't know. It's tough. It's all very tough. Anyway, we gotta move on though. So the conversation shifts. The conversation shifts from this letter to where Ethan is going to go because he's packing up his stuff. He says he can't stay at the Crane Mansion. He's not a Crane anymore. Makes sense. Okay. Yep. So he's packing up his stuff. He only has like one little duffel bag. It's really sad. He's ready to go. They're all like, well, where are you going to stay? Ethan's like, I don't know. He denies. Everybody offers their home to him, but he says, nope, I'll figure it out for myself. Okay. It's the middle of the night.
He tells his own fiance and is like, no, I can't stay with you. The Cranes might come after you. Says the same Chad and Whitney. The Cranes might come after your mom at the hospital.
Like, why would they have, why should they fear retribution from the Cranes because they let you sleep in their house? That doesn't make any sense. Cause like, it's not like Ethan did anything. He didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything. So anyway, Ethan's like, you know, I don't know where I'm going. Maybe I'll leave Harmony. Maybe I have to leave. This is all nonsense because we know Ethan ain't going no fucking where. Okay. Nope. So the fact that we even did this was annoying, but of course Teresa descends into flat out madness. Once when he says he might have to leave Harmony, she's like, you can't, it's going to tear us apart. I mean, you could, he's supposed to be your husband. You could go with him. I don't know. I'm just spitballing. Y'all could move out of Harmony together. I don't know. Maybe it's hard for him to live in this town. That's what he says. He says, you know, Harmony is, it's tough. The Cranes own this town. They own everything in it. I'm just reminded that I'm no longer a Crane everywhere I go. So I get him wanting to get out of Harmony. I do. And if I were Teresa, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe we should look into, maybe let's look into Boston. What's going on in Boston? Get out of this town with the hellhole, literal hellhole. This literal hellhole of a town. But no, Teresa's like, no, you're not going anywhere. And he's like, you're right, I'm not going anywhere.
And then he does end up going to.
So before he leaves the mansion, he's like, I'm ready to go. But before he leaves the mansion, he goes down to Julian's office and their enormous family Bible is just like out sitting on Julian's desk. He opens up the family Bible and he crosses out his name. It was sad. It was really sad. But, you know, it had to be done. Oh, I feel bad for Ethan.
I do. And in that way, like he's not great most of the time, but like in these moments, you've got to feel for somebody who has lost their whole identity. And in such a way, in that way of the, you know, in front of everyone, the embarrassment. So there's a lot. I get it.
It's devastating. It's devastating news to get. And like you said, it's devastating to get it in that way at a happy occasion. Like you're the happiest you've been in your life, you know, and then this whole thing happens. So it's devastating. But after that whole thing with the Bible, Whitney and Chad are leaving and Whitney asks Chad why he didn't tell Ethan. Sorry. And this is when he says, you know, well, I got off on the technicality. And he also said, Teresa's face, I just couldn't do it to her. She was the way she was looking, she just looked so pitiful, but she needs to tell him. And then Ethan starts talking about how he feels like he's living in a Greek tragedy. And he's like, it's like Pandora's box was opened. And Teresa tries to confess to this man. And she says, this is all my fault. What if I'm the one who opened Pandora's box? But only Pandora's box wasn't a box. It was an attaché case.
I forgot about that attaché case.
It was an attaché case. So she says, I didn't open Pandora's box, but I opened up I opened up Pandora's attaché case. And she says, you know, this is my fault. I unleashed all of these secrets. Mm-hmm. And she holds up the tabloid specifically. She holds up the tabloid and says, this is my fault. And Ethan, as much as I just said, I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
I cannot stand him. Ethan fully interrupts this woman's confession, which he's been saying all night. I need to find out who knew about this letter. I need to find out who knew about this letter. I need to find out. But the minute somebody has something to say to you about it, you interrupt them. She's in full-blown confession mode, and he interrupts her and says, this isn't your fault, Teresa. I know what you think you did. I know what you think, but this isn't your fault. Don't worry about it. And she thinks that he understands, which I don't know why she would think he would understand. Girl, you say you've been in love with this man all these years. You don't know how dumb he is. You know he doesn't understand. He never understands. He never gets it right. No. And he says, I know what you're talking about, Teresa, and this isn't your fault. And she's like, oh, Ethan, you really forgive me? And he's like, there's nothing to forgive. You didn't do anything wrong. And then he says, you think because I called off my engagement to Gwen, because of you, that made people start to look into my past and do digging up about me. What? He was like, the publicity surrounding my called off engagement because of you has caused this to surface. No, that's not what I was saying. No. And also, that is not what has happened.
No.
So, and that's what I was saying.
Caused them to dig up stuff on Teresa, but
Yeah, they would be digging up stuff on Teresa. Like, Ethan is a public figure. They know everything about him. They wouldn't be digging into him. They'd be looking up, who's this lady? For sure. But yeah, he's a moron. I can't stand him. And then he just reiterates that whoever had that letter and knew about it and didn't tell him, he will destroy their life. He says that again.
Yeah.
He says his goodbyes to the mansion, and he says, my life as a crane is over. Poor Ethan. Truly. I know I just gave him some shit, but oh, poor guy.
Yeah.
He's really going through it. So at this point, Ethan and Teresa hear like a commotion in the mansion in Ivy's room. And so they go to check that out. So let's go there really quickly. Let's not go there. Just know that that happens. They hear a commotion in Ivy and Ivy's room, and they go to check it out. So with that said, let's finish up a little bit here, because I think we can. Teresa has a dream that Ethan finds out that she was the one who knew, or she knew about the letter, and he comes in and he breaks up with her and he hates her. I knew it was a dream immediately, because I know this goes on for a solid 4 years, and I just was like, this is bullshit.
It also happened too quickly. Passions, whenever they reveal something, they usually reveal it, like, they reveal it in one episode. There's a little bit of aftermath in the next episode. This was all just way too fast. You did it. You knew who did it, and you didn't tell me. And just everything just happened too quickly and too conveniently to happen just right away. Like,
yeah.
As long as you reveal it in that way, in that format. But
yeah. This ain't my first rodeo, Passions. I don't even know why they even tried to do that to anybody. No. Nobody's buying it. Anyway, she wakes up, realizes it was a dream, a nightmare, has a conversation with Pilar, where Pilar, I'm a little annoyed with Pilar. And partially because the situation Teresa is in right now is all Pilar's fault. Fully. Mm. It is. And she kept Teresa from telling Ethan the truth, which was her instinct. That was Teresa's instinct, to tell him the truth.
Yep.
She kept her from doing that. Then once it all came out, she's like, you have to tell him. Now you need to tell him. But now he's talking about he would destroy people's lives. Why couldn't I have done it before when I wanted to? Then,
Go ahead.
Now, after Teresa's having this dream, Teresa tells her mom about this dream, and Pilar is like, Teresa, you know, I just don't think you should start a marriage based on lies, and this is probably going to tear you two apart. Pilar, can I get some better advice, Pilar? Pilar has put the cranes above her own family. Mm-hmm. She does that a lot, and she puts the happiness of the cranes above her own happiness or her own kids' happiness. And this is just another example of her. I don't know. Sometimes she's right, but this time I don't think she's completely right. I get where she's saying, coming from, where it's like, you should tell him the truth, but like, you're the reason I hadn't told him the truth.
And she mentioned that in the little dream sequence at one point. She's like, I told Teresa not to tell you. And Ethan's like, you can't protect her. And so Pilar is just like,
yeah,
you know, and that whole thing. But it really, like, it starts with Pilar. And that's why I don't like this whole thing of, like, Teresa is taking on the brunt of all of this. And it really is not all her. It really is not all her. She's not just this horrible person. She's put in an awful predicament with information she wasn't supposed to have.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just I'm biased, so I really love Teresa, but I don't fully blame her for this.
No, this is not her. None of this is her fault.
No,
none of this is her fault. Everything that Teresa has, every step that Teresa has taken in this whole letter situation to me has been reasonable. Maybe not necessarily what I would do, but definitely I understand where she's coming from. I understand why she's doing what she's doing. I understand why she scanned those letters. I understand when she wanted to tell Ethan, why she wanted to tell Ethan. I understand her not wanting to tell him now. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think she should tell him. I think she should bite the bullet and tell him.
At this point, with the way things are,
yeah,
I think she should at this point, just to be honest with him, because there's not really a time frame, because she's like, you know, you knew all along and didn't tell me. Well, I didn't have any real reason to tell you up until kind of now. It wasn't like it was this long thing of deceit, like we're getting ready to go into with Gwen and Rebecca, knowing for years that, ha, we did it and never telling him. That's not this.
Yes. And not to kick a dead horse or beat a dead horse, but it's really only been like 2 days. Really? Like, it really has not been that long.
Their first date was like 4 days ago.
Sincerely, so much has happened in like truly less than a week. They're trying to make us think it's been more than a week by having Christmas and New Year's and doing all of that. But and that Ethan's wedding to Gwen was supposed to be in the spring, but literally they weren't even having that wedding until fucking November. So it has not been that long since Teresa found out this information. It was the night of Ethan and Gwen's wedding, which, by the way, I want to say 2 episodes ago, Rebecca made it seem like that happened last night. Okay. So the way the dialogue was written, Rebecca says, basically, we've had a rough 24 hours, but it's like the same day as Ethan and Teresa's engagement party.
And we've had New Year's.
So to be fair to Teresa, it hasn't actually been that long either. So if she would just do it right now, which we know she's not going to, I need to just let it go. But if she would just do it right now, I think everything would be fine.
How it comes out later that it was her. And I don't think at any point once it does come out, he doesn't really blame her, because I think it comes out that, you know, whatever that she did, but I don't think he never really knew who did it. Not until, you know, much later.
Oh, so dumb. I hate how long this takes.
Because even when the finger pointing gets pointed at her, he doesn't think she did it, but she lies to him so much. And that is what is her downfall, is that she just lies.
Yeah. So with all of that said, when that was a lot said, let's pick up with Ivy, who is at the hospital. So let's go over to the hospital.
Ivy.
Pilar runs into Ivy at the hospital, and she stops Ivy from going back to bother Sam some more. She, like, you, we already did this. We had almost the exact same scene we had last week. I don't know what it is that Ivy wants from Sam. And that's basically what Pilar says to her. What do you want from him? And Ivy says that she just needs to talk to him because she doesn't want him to hate her. And he does, she doesn't want him to blame her for Grace losing the baby. Mm-hmm. Well, girl, it just happened. Like, give the man some breathing room. Give these people some space.
They just lost their baby. You need to go home and handle your own. Plus, your son at home that you've been lying to, that's who you need to be with right now. And let Sam handle his wife and his lost baby.
Not to mention her other three kids that Julian brings up later.
Oh,
that
he does hilarious. Bring up Fancy Fox and Freddie. He sure does. It's like,
he's like,
do they come home? Do they come around? Do they ever see you? And I'm like, first of all, you're not a good dad either.
Well, he makes a good point, though, because maybe they don't come around because of both of them, right? Mm-hmm. But anyway, so Pilar, Pilar reads Ivy down, and I was living. So Pilar says, yells in this hospital at Ivy. She says, when are you going to realize that this is not about you? Great. But then she goes on to say, maybe you have become more like Julian and Alistair than you think. No wonder Sam loves Grace instead of a self-absorbed, unfeeling woman like you.
Yes, she does.
She dropped the gauntlet on the bitch. I mean, it was so good. Oh, an unfeeling woman like you.
Mm-hmm.
Ivy's incredulous. Ivy's like, oh, how dare you? You know, like, Pilar, why? How could you say these things to me? Pilar goes on to say, though, Pilar does not apologize. She does not pull back. She pulls no punches. She says, you denied Sam the chance to be a part of his own son's life. And now, because of the way your secret came out, he has lost another son. Whoo. And then Ivy tries to turn it around on Pilar and says, well, you kept the secret too. Bitch!
You asked her to.
And I know.
You would not have let her tell.
I know you did not just do that. I know. Listen, Ivy is out of control. Out of control. I love her. I love her. I love her like I love Teresa. I do. But she's so, just, Pilar hit the nail on the head. Self-absorbed. That
is prime gaslighting. Like, you kept the secret. It was your secret. You asked her to keep it. And I correct me if I'm wrong, I think there were times where she might have wanted to say something. And Ivy's just, you know, freaking out, just trembling, like, don't say anything. And Pilar doesn't. Because she's a good friend. She was doing you a favor and you throw it back in her face.
Yeah. I think there was more times when Ivy was ready to blow it all up and blow up her life. And Pilar was like, girl, calm down. Calm down. Take a sleeping pill. So Pilar says, after Ivy says, you kept the secret too, Pilar says, well, I regret keeping that secret. And I do feel guilty for my part in this. And I accept that I played a part in this, but I don't like that I played a part in this. Ivy then says, so do you think their marriage is in trouble? Girl, she's like, literally like, do you think Sam and Grace are going to stay together? Or you think I got an opening here? Ivy, are you dead ass?
This is the time, Ivy. This is the best timing.
Pilar is basically like, girl, stop right there. She says, I hope that's not what you're wishing for. And then she just says, leave Sam alone. Go home, get some sleep. You can straighten things out with Sam some other time. Ivy says, okay, yes, I'm going to do that. But then she gives Pilar the slip and goes to find Sam. Sam, meanwhile, is talking to Grace, and he is racked with guilt about everything that has been going on and everything that has happened tonight. He says that he should have told her about Ivy, but he says, I was scared. I was scared that you would be upset that there was someone else before you. That's what he said. I was scared that you would be upset that there was someone else. They met in like their mid-20s, I think. Like,
I don't understand this show and like having to have been your person, whoever your person is. I don't understand you having to be their first one. I don't understand the significance. It's like he absolutely could have had other people. And for all Grace, though, she could have had other people. Like, it's...
Of course he had other people.
And it's fine. That's normal.
Yeah, that's how it works. That's how dating works.
And then you find someone, and then you marry that person, and that's your person.
Yeah.
But like, I don't understand. I don't understand Grace. Her anger is justified in a lot of, like, I can't imagine the pain that she's in. But, mm-hmm. like... he had someone before her.
Yeah. Well, I blame Sam for this. I'm not even mad at Grace about this. I'm mad at Sam because he just internalized this idea that Grace was just so weak that she couldn't possibly handle the idea of her husband having had a love life before her without ever even having a conversation with her. And she has asked him multiple times about it. So, you know what? I'm with Grace 100%. I stand with Grace on this. Mm-hmm. I stand with Grace. And Grace is pissed, y'all. She's had some time. She's grieving. She's mad. She's pissed. She tells Sam, you didn't trust me. You didn't trust that our marriage could survive your secret. You didn't trust that I could handle it. What else have you been lying about? What else do you think I can't handle? Mm-hmm. Honey, she was going off, and I totally get it. Because I agree, like, you're lying to me all this time because you think I just can't handle the truth. You think it's gonna be better for me.
And I hate that. I don't like being coddled. I'm like, I need somebody to be upfront with me. I don't like you to not tell me because you're afraid of my, you know, you're just wanting to protect my feelings. I'm like, you need to trust that I can handle what you have to say.
Exactly.
And this was seeing the actress Dana, I think it's Dana, mm-hmm. at her prime, just that anger and that frustration, and that was just such a good performance from her. Like,
yeah,
yeah. I really liked that more than just the sweet housewife in the tomato soup cake. Like, here's somebody that's got some anger and has some feelings, and we're seeing what's underneath all of that.
Oh, these clips will absolutely be on the TikTok and the Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, everything, because they finally gave her something to do. Yes. And I loved it. They finally gave her something to do. So he says to her, well, you know, it was one lie. And she says, it's the lie our marriage was based on, which I don't totally agree with. She says, it's the lie our marriage was based on. Our marriage is nothing but a sham. I don't fully agree with this. No. It's a reach. Yeah. It's a reach for me. Because listen, I would be angry if you had this woman in my house around me and I had no clue that y'all had a relationship, let alone a child together. But like in the beginning, our relationship isn't based on the fact that you had another, our relationship can't possibly be based on who your past relationships were.
Yeah.
You know,
once he met her, he rescued her from the fire. He fell in love with her. That was it. You know, he was still, I think at that point, maybe heartbroken over Ivy, yeah. But he fell in love with Grace. They got together. They got married. They had 3 kids. They had a life. It wasn't like.
Yeah. And that's that.
And then Ivy all of a sudden started, you know, poking around again. But.
Well, Grace goes on to say, all those times I asked you about your life before me, all those times I caught you so close to Ivy, you could have told me any of those times. You could have told me. She right on the money. He could have told her any of those times. She said, I asked you about it. And you just lied to my face. And he says, well, I was afraid. Ain't that just like a cop? Mm. I was afraid for my life. Yeah. I was afraid, so I had to shoot. Sam Bennett is a bad police officer. And that's the line that bad police officers use. I was afraid. What? Mm. I can't deal with Sam. I was so scared. Of what? Of what? Especially at the beginning. It's like, oh, you were scared that she would break up with you? Okay. If she was going to break up with you because you had a girlfriend before you, do you want to be with somebody like that?
Yeah.
Like if I don't want to be with a man who's like, oh, you've had a boyfriend? Yes. Like I'm 33. Yes. I've had a boyfriend or two. Of course it's weirder if I hadn't. But anyway, he says he was scared that's what he said. I was afraid. I don't even understand what it is that he was afraid of.
I don't know. He doesn't explain it very well.
Well, he asks for her forgiveness over and over again. Grace gets more and more agitated. Eve comes in and tells Sam he needs to leave and so that she can calm Grace down. So she calms Grace down. And then Grace is left in the room by herself. Honey, this is when Ivy shows up. And this was spectacular. Spectacular. So Ivy comes in looking for Sam. So she peeks into She peeks into this hospital room and she doesn't even look. She doesn't see Ivy. She senses Ivy. It's gorgeous. Oh, so good. She just senses Ivy is there. And she's like, Ivy, what are you doing here? Here to take my husband, like here to ruin my life some more. She gets pissed. Ivy apologizes, tries to apologize anyway. And Grace says, it won't bring back my baby. And then she goes, to think I actually thought of you as a friend. You played me for the worst kind of fool. You must have thought I was incredibly stupid. All those times I caught you with Sam, all that crying about losing your first love and having to endure a loveless marriage with Julian, I actually felt sorry for you. I wrote this speech because it was so good. She says I actually felt sorry for you from the day. And then she goes on to say, from the day you were born, you probably believed you were a princess and that you were entitled to anything and everything you ever wanted. And she says, but when I see you, all I see is a spoiled, selfish, manipulative bitch. Woo! Yep. Man, the best part of all, she just starts yelling, I curse you, Ivy Crane. I curse you, Ivy Crane. I curse you to the same unspeakable pain that you have brought to me tonight. May it last your entire lifetime. Grace then, with her rage, just makes the earthquake.
Everything's shaking in the room. I think the lights are like, it's just...
Everything's going haywire. She's making the room shake. The whole hospital is shaking.
Yep.
It's
like Tabitha said.
She's in... Yes, this is... It's like Tabitha said. I'm so glad they had that moment where Tabitha was like, well, Grace has great cursing powers. That's my Tabitha. Don't, you know, laugh if you want. It's bad. It's bad. I know it's bad.
I can't do any better.
Yeah, but Grace makes the earthquake with her powerful rage and cursing powers. And she says, I'm damning you to a life of hell on earth. May you and your whole family pay for what you have done. I curse you for eternity. Eternity is a long time. Sam and Eve rush back in to check on Grace. They find Ivy there. Sam gets pissed, pulls her out of the room. Eve, of course, sedates Grace. Of course.
No, we got to sedate.
This was like one time where she probably needed to be sedated. I mean, she was making an entire earthquake. I wonder if they're going to attribute that to Grace, or if everybody's just going to be like, oh, it's just a weird anomaly. Even though once we sedated her, the earthquake stopped.
Probably the same way they're doing with the house at home.
Yeah. Well,
the walls and the.
I know. They just gloss over everything. So Sam pulls Ivy outside and reads her the riot act again. It's the same conversation from last week. It's the exact same conversation from last week. I don't really want to rehash it. He just tells her, get out of my life, get out of my family's life. I'd never want to see you again. Mm-hmm. She says, what about Ethan? He is your son. And Sam says, Ethan doesn't think of me as a father and I don't think of him as a son. That's that. And that's on you. And that's really kind of where we end it. She decides, you know, I need to go. Pilar was right. I need to go home. I shouldn't have done this. Yes. What made you think this was going to go better than this? What made you think this was going to go well? You know, I'm of course you didn't think that Grace was going to make an earthquake with her rage, but she certainly wouldn't be happy to see you. Mm-mm. And Sam has already said he doesn't want to see you. So just go home.
Go home.
Go home, Ivy. So
you've made
Ivy goes home. So let's talk about what's going on at her house. Mm-hmm. Julian and Rebecca are talking about the Crane Hotchkiss merger. Mm-hmm. This was weird because the business part of this, that business merger that they were supposed to be having, this Crane Hotchkiss merger was supposed to happen because Ethan married Gwen, because Ethan is a Crane and Gwen is a Hotchkiss. But now Rebecca saying, I can marry you, Julian, and the Crane Hotchkiss merger can go ahead because my husband, John, is just is chomping at the bit to get rid of her, apparently. And so he says, she tells Julian, Jonathan said, if you marry me, then the merger will go ahead. What?
That wasn't okay. Then why didn't we just do that?
Who wrote this? Who wrote this? I don't get it. I don't get it at all. What kind of nonsense is this? Oh, you cuckolded me. So I'm going to not only give you my wife, but also if you take my wife off my hands, I'm also going to give you my business. What? I don't. This was bad writing. I don't get it, but maybe he's just so, maybe it's that thing that he won't have to pay her alimony because once she gets married again, he doesn't have to pay her alimony. So he's like, okay, as long as he marries you immediately, maybe, I don't know. All right. They have this conversation. It's weird. Ivy returns to the mansion to find Rebecca and Julian in her bed. Okay, so after Rebecca and Julian have this conversation about this merger, they decide to go have sex in Ivy's bedroom. The disrespect. I mean, I understand that Ivy has lied to you and perpetrated this great deception on you, but it's just weird to me.
It is weird, and him and Ivy have no love lost for each other, so that wouldn't even be. I wouldn't even be in the mood. Like, this room reminds me of my wife that I like, why are we in here? Why is this the place?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's mostly Rebecca just trying to, you know, get at Ivy because...
Yeah, it is mostly Rebecca trying to get at Ivy and get under Ivy's skin, which she succeeds at. So Ivy comes home, realizes that those two are in her bed. She yells, tells them to get out. Then they have they start arguing for a little bit. It's kind of comical arguing, but then Ethan and Teresa come into the room because they heard this commotion. This is the commotion that as they were leaving the mansion. So they come into the room. Ivy realizes that Ethan has a bag with him and is moving out of the mansion. And she appeals to Julian and says, tell him he can stay as long as he wants. This is his home. Julian says, Ethan's a smart young man. He knows what he has to do. And then he turns his back on Ethan. It's so sad. Oh, so hard to watch some of this. Honestly, I do feel so bad for Ethan.
It was really hard for, and this is skipping ahead a little bit. I think at one point, Alistair calls Julian. What are you doing? He knows Julian's been fooling around with Rebecca. He's like, you know, we need to work on, you know, the family and da-da-da-da or something like that. And then it At some point, Ethan realizes that it's Alistair is on the phone and he wants to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And Alistair, that's the next part. Like, yeah. Like, click.
Yeah. Ethan. So in the middle of all of this little situation, Alistair calls, tells Julian, put on his pants. And they're having a little conversation. Ethan says, you know, is that Alistair? I'd really like to talk to him just to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. And so Julian hands him the phone. Ethan says, hello, Alistair. I know you're really busy. I'll keep this quick. And then before he can say anything else, Alistair very meanly with his fingers, all we can see are his hands, this hand actor, he's doing such a good job. He just like, boom.
He is.
It's very good tension in his fingers when he hit the button to turn off, to hang up on Ethan. He hangs up on Ethan, and Ethan's just standing there with the phone to his face, shocked, honestly. And then everybody says, so what? Wait, what did Alistair say? And he says, he hung up on me. He didn't say anything. He hung up on me. It was really sad. But I need Ethan to understand what the Cranes are really like to everyone else. And he's starting to see it.
Get it. Yep.
Right? But he still doesn't get it, I don't think.
No.
So he tries to say his goodbyes to Alistair. Al hangs up on him. Ivy gets really pissed. And she says that he's always done everything that Alistair wanted him to do. He really shouldn't treat you like this. He has no right to treat you like this. Rebecca jumps in talking about, oh, well, he wanted you to marry Gwen and you didn't do that. So technically, meh, 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 meh. It's like, girl, shut the hell up. Now's not the time.
Go home. She's doing okay now.
I hate Rebecca Hotchkiss.
She, to me, is when there is like a rankings of evil on the show, and I feel like Rebecca is worse than Alistair. And I know that's a lot because Alistair pulls some shit later, but like Rebecca is just and I mean, again, applauding the actress, Andrea just does a phenomenal job at making you hate her. She's annoying in everything she does, her little mannerisms, the uppity attitude and that.
Yeah.
Just everything. I hate her.
I hate Rebecca. I will say the only reason I'm going to say that Alistair is worse, the only reason Alistair is worse than Rebecca is because he's like a serial rapist and
true.
And yep. Like a murderer. Very and true. An abusive father. Yeah. You know, very abusive, very abusive. So Alistair, I'm going to say Alistair's worse than Rebecca because Rebecca would not treat Gwen the way Alistair treats his kids.
If there's anybody on the show that she does love, it's her daughter.
She wouldn't do that. But other than that, they're pretty close. Mm-hmm. They're pretty close. She is really awful. I hate Rebecca so much. But anyway. Ivy, Ethan and Teresa leave. Ivy tells Rebecca, why are you even still here? Like, let me be clear. I am Mrs. Crane. You can fuck Julian all you want, but this is my bedroom. This is my house. And I'm not going without a fight. I will be Mrs. Ethan Crane, not Ethan Crane. I will be Mrs. Crane until I die. That's what she says. They have an argument. She and Julian have an argument. Yeah, so but basically, basically, she throws a bunch of shit at Julian. Like you said, vases and like a bunch of chinaware, a bunch of glassware. He gets out of the room. He gets away. She gets pissed. She's upset. She does say, fuck, I really did ruin my whole life and my son's life. This is my fault. So she is aware of her, what she has done. That's at least something for Ivy.
Yeah.
Ethan goes to the cottage to say goodbye to Sheridan. Sheridan insists that he stay the night. So let's very quickly talk about what's been going on with Sheridan and Luis. They've been fucking for like 20 episodes.
They have.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
They haven't talked about anything. So we and don't have
so much build up before they even did it. Yeah. She was just like, did you take care of the phones? Did you take care of the house? So then we're not going to get interrupted. And they have all this. And I'm like, y'all could have fucked by now. And then they do.
They could have done it a bunch of times.
There's a song that plays, but like, that's it. They just have sex.
That's all they did this week. So we don't have to talk much about them. The only thing I do want to talk about is that when the next morning, so Sheridan insists that Ethan stay the night at the cottage. He takes her up on the offer, sleeps on the couch. The next morning, she comes out. She's trying to comfort him. He says he had this horrible nightmare and then realizes it wasn't a nightmare. It was like everything that happened at his engagement party. Mm-hmm. And so then they talk about the crane name, and she talks about how it must be so tough for you. I know how it's going to be really tough for you because the crane name carries so much weight. Anywhere you go, people respect it, all of this. Luis overhears this, and of course he can't help himself. It now's not the right time, but what he said is not wrong. He mm-hmm. says, yeah, well, I know you're hurting right now, Ethan, but maybe now you can see the other side of the crane name now, the side that everybody hates. Maybe you're going to learn, or maybe you can see why everybody in this town hates the cranes. Mm-hmm. And Ethan gets really defensive, but I get it. I get why he gets defensive. It's like, now's not the time, and I don't really like you. So yeah. Leave me alone.
And also, all this stuff just happened. It's right. It's like he's still...
The wound is fresh.
Yes.
Yeah. It was really Louis. It almost felt like Luis was just like pouring salt in the wound. It mm-hmm. wasn't the right time to say this. No. And y'all don't have the kind of relationship where you can say something. I think if Chad said something like that to him, he would have accepted it or received it a lot better than with it coming from Luis.
No, because him and Luis still have, I think they're putting their issues aside for the people they love. But they still have some issues with each other.
Issues, yes. Mm-hmm. So let me see. The next morning. Oh, I do want to talk about that's basically it. The one last thing I do want to talk about is that Rebecca is in a bubble, takes a bubble bath, and tape records a confession.
I wrote that because I was like, Rebecca, what did I put? I said, it's a new morning and Rebecca is recording her diary on like a recorder for some reason. Just diary entry or whatever. She's just brought like recapping kind of.
It is fully recap, but it's also a taped confession of everything misdeed she has done recently. Every recent misdeed. So I don't know if that's just for a show or if that's going to come into play at any point. I don't know. But I hope it does. I don't know. It probably won't. That's too easy. Mm-hmm. But so after her bubble bath, her confessional bubble bath, she goes to the mansion with a team of designers and is like, we're going to redecorate. And it's just taunting Ivy and just being a general uber bitch. I don't like Rebecca. I know I just said I can't stand her. Ivy's enraged.
Get under Ivy's skin because she knows she can't do anything yet. There hasn't even been you don't belong here yet. This bitch, this is not your house.
She does not care. Ivy is enraged and she says, you are not moving in, you are not redecorating, and you are not marrying my husband. I love that line. You're not marrying my husband. That what a great line. And then she calls her a scheming, duplicitous, low-life, backstabbing trollop, which is awesome because Rebecca sucks.
It's true though. And she's just irritating. She's just like a little kid just poking.
I can't stand her.
And so, Julia's just like, you should be nice to our house guests. And she's just like, you call all of these people guests. Like she's just Ivy's just in a full on. And I don't blame her.
I'm with Ivy. I stand with Ivy. I do. I get why Julian, I mean, what she did is absolutely grounds for divorce. But she told him, you're in for the fight of your life. You're going to have to pry the name Crane from my cold, dead hands, my lifeless body. I will die in this house. This is mine. All of it. So.
And I feel like I get in a way where Julian's coming from. But again, it's not like he's been the best husband. I mean, he's been fucking around on her all this whole damn show. And so all of a sudden, I understand the anger about Ethan, but I don't get the divorce, but you can fuck around. And then Ivy is like, I'm going to be Mrs. Crane. I will not give you a divorce. I will tie this up in court for years. I'm like, how are you going to get, do you think Sam's going to, like, so you also want Sam. Do you think Sam is going to come while you're married to Julie? I don't understand your refusal.
I think at this point she feels like Sam is no longer an option. I think right now, I know that she cycles. I think she's in the point in the cycle where she's like, Sam is not an option. I need to hang on to what the fuck I do have.
Okay.
So I think that's where her head's at. You make an excellent point about Julian's philandering ways. He's been cheating on Ivy their entire relationship. Yeah, you make a great point. The Ethan stuff, that's big. Big. It's definitely huge. But, I mean, he has been cheating on her a lot. And he basically says that infidelity is grounds for divorce, is what he says to her.
Hmm.
And you've been an infidel. You have not been faithful to Ivy either. So, and Ivy's been so faithful to you outside of that one time.
Mm-hmm.
And all those other times she tried to have sex with Sam. But that's it. That's the end of my notes. So before we go, I'm going to say my shout outs to our patrons, one of which is the fabulous Cam that is on with me right now. But to the rest of you, let's see. Thank you to, if it comes up. All right. Thank you to Moon Ashe, Marcus, Erica, Brelin, Lisa, Zach, Sid, Sarana, Dustin, Heather, Randall, Ashley, Shannon, Hannah, Camelia, Monique, Samantha, Amy, Jeanette, Eric, Jamie, and our newest patron, Fantasia. Thank you all so very, very much. Remember, you all can, if you would like to be a patron, you can go over to patreon.com/passionspodcast and sign up for any tier that you like. It really helps. I really appreciate any help I can get. I am loving it because I really want to keep bringing this show to everybody. But there's not a lot of us, so we got a band together. So, thank you all very much. So everybody, remember you can catch me on social media at Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. I always forget Twitter. At Passions Podcast, most places, if you just search Passions Podcast, you'll find me. The ads have changed, so I don't want to say all of them. All right.
Twitter is at Podcast Passions.
Yes, Twitter's at Podcast Passions.
Yeah.
Instagram's at Passions Pod now.
Yes.
And then TikTok and Facebook are both still at Passions Podcast. All right. So thank you, everybody, for joining me once again. I can't believe y'all are still listening to this. But remember,
best part of my Monday.
Aw, you are my passion for life.